Let's open our Bibles to John chapter 10, and we'll continue in our series on who is Jesus, looking again at the things that Jesus had to say about shepherds and sheep. And we're going to start in verse 11. When I was traveling in India, there was the first week I was with Tim Sullivan guiding us, and we were with a bunch of other pastors, and it was a really fun time, and it was also a very secure time because, everything's relative. We had some hair-raising experiences, but Tim knew where he was going and what he was doing. But there came a time when I had to leave that group and travel by myself on an in-country airline out of a different airport to the town of Nagpur to teach in a Bible school that was run by a different missionary. When the time came to leave that other group, I was a little uneasy about it because I'd never been to India before. And if you have never been there before, it's a rather strange and wonderful land, but it's unpredictable. So the missionary back here had given me a phone number to call when I was ready to leave the other group. And he said, there's a pastor in Delhi, and just call him and he'll make sure that you have a place to stay overnight, and then he'll take you to the domestic airline in the morning. Sounded like a plan to me. So I called him the night before we got to Delhi. Found out he didn't speak English. He almost hung up on me. We struggled a little bit, and then it turned out his son spoke a little English, and so he put his son on, and then using the son as an interpreter, we made a plan that when we got to Delhi, I would wait for him in a hotel lobby that was near the other airport where the other guys were going. When I got to the hotel lobby, it was jammed with people that all looked like they could possibly have been the pastor that I was looking for. So I just kind of hung out and waited and watched carefully to see who looked like they were looking for me. That was kind of a long wait. And after about a half hour after he said he'd be there, this guy came dashing in that looked like he was looking for somebody. And I went over to him and through a series of sign language and a few choppy words of English and so forth, discovered that he was not the pastor that was my contact, but he was his brother. And he had come on his motorbike to take me to the pastor's house in a slum outside of Delhi. Well, my luggage wouldn't fit on the motorbike. And so he went over to a motorized rickshaw driver. Motorized rickshaws look like this. They're three-wheel vehicles. This was at night, by the way. This wasn't the one. He put me in one of these and my luggage, and then he hopped on his motorbike and took off into the teeming, chaotic mess that they call traffic in Delhi. And so, you know, we're weaving in and out of all these, you know, cars coming in all directions. And it wasn't long before the motorbike was not in our view any longer. And the driver of the rickshaw couldn't speak any English. And I didn't know anybody. I barely even knew the name of the pastor I was supposed to meet. And here we were going off into the middle of nowhere. It was a memorable evening. I got laughing so hard I thought that the rickshaw driver would think I was nuts. But it was hilarious. And after a while, we turned down this dirt road into this, it looked like the market scene in Indiana Jones movie. It was just, it's late at night, but it was teeming with humanity going in all different directions, cows and donkeys and pigs and guys walking by carrying ladders and these little huts. And it was a maze. Well, long story short, we got where we were supposed to go. I spent the night with the pastor, and he got me to the airplane in the morning. But during that episode, it sure would have been nice to know that there was a plan of it being accomplished. That everything was on track the way it was supposed to happen. And it occurred to me that life gets a little bit like this from time to time. Things happen in life. We get startled by unpredicted events, or we get blindsided by medical things or emotional things or who knows what. And there are times when it feels in life like maybe we're in the wrong rickshaw, heading in the wrong direction, and we're not real sure where we're supposed to be or which direction we're supposed to be going. And at times like that, it would be really nice to know that there's a plan, that everything is unfolding the way it's supposed to unfold. You know, you read in Scripture, God has ordained our days, and you take some comfort from that. But there are times when it would be really nice to have like an itinerary, you know, and be able to, okay, you know, I'm in this rickshaw now heading that direction. That's what's supposed to happen. And this is the kind of attitude that people must have felt when Jesus was talking to them after he had healed the blind man. And the problem was that after he healed the blind man and the synagogue authorities threw the man out of the synagogue, essentially excommunicating him from any contact with God, Jesus pointed out to the people that the trusted religious leaders that they had bankrolled their eternal security with were nothing but a bunch of thieves. That they were not out for the people's best interests. They were not reliable in that sense, but rather they were out for their own glory, their own prestige, their own self-interest, and so consequently they could not be trusted. Well, in their state of shock, feeling like the rug had been pulled out from under them, Jesus said, look, I am the gate through whom you can truly connect to God and find this abundant life that you sense that you need. And the life will come in the Spirit, and you can go in through me to find this life. You go out through me to live this life. And so he connected with them on that level. You know, there is a solution to this. But at the same time, he realized that, you know, that there's this uneasiness of wondering, well, what is the plan? And addressing that insecurity, he said to them, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks and the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. Now, Jesus was talking to people that knew shepherding. They had experienced firsthand, most of them, with the difference that happens between somebody who is hired as a, you know, maybe he's got a summer job watching somebody's sheep, and he does it, you know, kind of a lick and a promise kind of a way, you know, a little bit okay, but not, he's not devoted to it like the owner is. And the difference that happens in the flock is dramatic. You know, in order to truly shepherd a flock and get good results, you have to give yourself up for them. You have to put away your own desires and needs and wants and so forth, and go on out to by yourself hunting for good pasture and pulling up the dangerous weeds and barricading the cliffs that they might fall off, and then leading the flock out there and then watching for strays and chasing down the strays and bringing them back and binding up the wounded and all these kinds of things. You're constantly serving the sheep. Because sheep are so dumb and they're so clueless and they go off in all directions. You have to constantly be on patrol, especially with regard to the wolf. Because the wolf prowls around and he's looking to scatter the sheep so he can select the slowest one and pick him off and eat him. And a good shepherd will stand in between his flock and that kind of danger. But not the hired hand, Jesus says. But so in a sense, he's saying, look, I am someone who's going to take care of you. I am the good shepherd because I am going to work selflessly on your behalf. But that's not all he's saying. There's a very, very important three-letter word in there that's different from what he said before. Even though it doesn't necessarily look different in all of the English translations, it is different in the way he said it. He didn't say, I am a good shepherd. He said, I am the good shepherd. And he said it in a dramatic way, so it was clear to those that were listening to him that he was talking about a specific shepherd, a certain one. Well, who's that? He's referring to a promise that God made to his people centuries before. And reiterated that promise throughout the various prophecies. But one of the most clear places to see it is in the prophecy of Ezekiel that was written maybe 500 years before Jesus came or so, 500-600 years. And in those days, God, through his prophet Ezekiel, just blasted the religious leaders who were supposed to serve as shepherds for God's people. They were supposed to keep the people together in unity. They were supposed to keep them healthy and growing strong spiritually, connect them to God. They were supposed to protect them from attack and from danger and all this kind of thing. And the shepherds didn't do that. Rather, they fleeced the sheep. They lived off the sheep. They metaphorically speaking, slaughtered the sheep so they could have mutton chops. It was just disgraceful. And in fact, when Ezekiel wrote this scolding from God, the nation of Israel, which is the top half of the original land of Israel, was off in exile in Assyria, and the nation of Judah, the bottom third of the original land of Israel, they were off in Babylon. The whole vision, the whole idea of the promised land was ruined because the shepherds had not done what they were supposed to do. Well, God continued in that same prophecy through Ezekiel to say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he's with them, so I will look after my sheep. I'll rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on the days of clouds and darkness. I'll bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries. I'll bring them into their own land. I'll pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements of the land. I'll tend them in good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. I myself, God says, will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I'll bind up the injured and strengthen the weak, but the sleek and the strong I'll destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. There they will lie down in good grazing land. There they'll feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. Well, how's God going to do that? I mean, he had already communicated with the people through various leaders and prophets, and he even gave them written instructions, which they were not following. And the leaders were corrupt and going off. And how could he possibly do that? Well, he said he was going to do it by sending a shepherd who would be him, who would be God. He said it in these verses, come right soon after what we just read. I will save my flock. They will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another. I'll place over them one shepherd, my servant David. Now, that can't be King David, because King David was dead and buried centuries before this was written. It's the Hebrew way of saying somebody in the line of David. It's a very common way of referring to some famous or important person's descendants, is calling by that name. So I'm going to send one shepherd. I will save my flock. I will place over them one shepherd. You see the inconsistency? It's kind of like a riddle there. And he's going to be David, or somebody in the line of David, and he's going to tend them. He's going to be their shepherd. I, the Lord, will be their God. My servant David will be Prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. God made a sacred promise to his people that he himself would come in the form of a descendant of David to be their shepherd and to pull them back together and to bind up those who were wounded and sick and to protect them from danger and to throw out the dishonest and deceitful shepherds. And Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And what he's saying to the people is, all of this is according to plan. There's no accident that I've come. This is a fulfillment of what God has promised. I am the good shepherd. relax. It's according to plan. Well, for those who had ears to hear that, it must have been rather confusing, because if Jesus was the good shepherd who came to gather the flock together and to bring them out from the nations and pull them together and to bind up the lost, you know, gather the strays and to bind up the wounded, etc., etc., why was it that he rejected the religious leaders and instead focused his attention on some blind, penniless beggar who was sitting by the side of the road? Why was Jesus rejecting the religious hotshots, the ones that were the highest in esteem in the community, the ones who should have been at the front of the line to be part of the flock, and instead focusing his attention on a 5-time divorcee who was living with somebody else's husband at the time? Why was Jesus having anything to do with prostitutes? Why was he having anything to do with the tax collector who turned his back on his own people and did it for money? Why was he hanging out with a bunch of smelly fishermen? In other words, the confusing thing, the question that they must have been asking was, well, okay, if he's the good shepherd, who's the flock? If the religious leaders don't qualify, and these guys do, how do you define who the flock is? And Jesus answered that. He said in verse 14, I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. What's he talking about? He said, well, it's the same way as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Jesus is saying, you cannot define the flock according to who is a Jew. It's going beyond this sheep pen. It's going beyond the boundaries of Judaism, which is a radical, it shouldn't have been radical, but it was a radically threatening thought to these folks who had been taught all their lives that the only ones that God cared about was the nation of Jews. The actual descendants of Abraham were the ones that God would rescue. He had a covenant relationship with them, and everybody else was out of bounds. They had words in their language for everybody else. It was the words that get translated in English, peoples or nations or Gentiles. Those three words in English stand for the words in Hebrews that mean everybody who's not in the club, not in the flock. And Jesus said, I've got other sheep that are not in this flock, and I'm going to bring them in, and there's going to be one flock with no distinctions and one shepherd. I must do that. In other words, you cannot define the flock by what your religion has been. You cannot define the flock by who's a religious leader. You cannot define the flock by where you were born or who your parents were. You cannot define the flock by who's done the most good. You cannot define the flock by who's keeping the rules the best. You cannot define the flock in any other way than the way I have in mind. Now, again, this, for those who have ears to hear it or memories to remember it, this is according to plan. Because God said to Abraham when he first called him, back before he was even called Abraham, but Abram, he said, I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I'll curse. But all, see this word right here? All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. That does not all people. But all peoples, people from every nation, from every religion, people from every language, people from every corner of the globe will be blessed through Abraham. Again, after Abraham had had Isaac and had offered him as a sacrifice and God had provided the substitute and all of that, this is years later, he reiterated this plan with Abraham. He said, I'm going to bless you. And through your offspring, all nations, there's that word of outsiders, through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. God has always had the plan to select a limited group of people, a nation, a chosen people and through their offspring, singular, all nations would be blessed. Well, later on, through Isaiah, he reaffirmed this plan. He said, here in Isaiah, you may remember as we went through Isaiah, this is a servant song. He's talking prophetically to the servant or the shepherd who would come. He says, it's too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I've kept. I'll also make you a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. That's the plan. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, and I must bring in people from outside what you consider to be the flock to bring in the real flock. Well, if that's the case, well, how are they defined? How do you know who's in the flock? Well, Jesus said, I know who's in the flock. I know them. And they know me. In the same way that I know my Father, and my Father knows me. Now, to understand what he's talking about, you got to remember some of the other things that he said. That, you know, I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. The Father who lives in me is doing his work, he said. I can only do what I see my Father doing. I love the Father and do exactly what he shows me to do. And it's this intimate relationship. They are in me, and I am in them. That's how the flock is defined. It's this connection. Did you know that mothers of newborn infants have this unusual but measurable special bond with that infant, whereby if you put that infant in with a bunch of other screaming infants in a nursery, the mother from outside the room can hear her infant better than she can hear the others? And that infant will hear her voice and respond to it better than it will respond to the voices of any of the nurses, even people who are closer, because there's that intimate knowing. And that's kind of a dim view of what Jesus is talking about, of his sheep know him, and he knows his sheep, and they listen to his voice. And they show their ownership his ownership over them. They show their place in the flock by virtue of the fact that they hear his voice and respond to it. In Uganda, there's quite a problem with cattle rustling currently, and the army, it seems like, is constantly busting the rustlers and seizing these flocks, these mixed herds of cattle, and then try to figure out, well, okay, who owns these things? Get them back to the rightful owners. And a BBC reporter named Nathan Itungo wrote a piece about how he stood one day outside this big pen with all the cattle were in there, and this old woman came to get her cows, and she stood outside the corral, and she called each one of them by a different name. And as she called, that cow would raise its head and look at her, and she would trot over to this woman and follow her. And as far as the army was concerned, that was good enough for them. That was definite identification of who owned those cows. Same thing with Jesus. Jesus said, my flock, and it's one flock with one shepherd, according to plan, is made up of those who hear my voice and respond. I know them, they know me. We, in this country, but it's no different for any other country in the world, we hear Jesus' words all the time because they're so powerful and profound. They make their way into the common idiom of our country. You know, who's going to throw the first stone, do unto others, and all this kind of stuff. Jesus didn't say, those who hear my words. Those who hear my voice. I know them. Now, I don't know how it is for you to hear that, but I do know how it is for me. I know for a certainty that Jesus Christ rescued me. I know I heard his voice and followed him. But some 20 years later, plus, I recognize that in my life there are times when I'm so distracted or so busy or so tired or whatever it is that his voice gets lost in the hubbub. And if the flock is identified by who hears his voice, what I want to hear it better. I want to know him better. Olympic athletes, when they're traveling to the games, usually wear their uniforms because they want to be identified as those who have been selected to play in the games. The way the flock is identified is by whose voice we hear. And I want to hear his voice better because that's the identity. Jesus says, it's not those who call me Lord, it's those I know. I want to know Jesus. I want to know him better. Well, there's as comforting as it is to know that all of this is according to plan, there's something creeping into this that is replacing some of that comfort with a bit of uneasiness, and that's he keeps repeating something. I lay down my life for the sheep. You know, the first time he said it, they could interpret it as, well, I'm a good shepherd, so I serve the sheep selflessly. I put away my life so I can do what's necessary for them. But the second time he said it, it must have raised questions of, well, what does he mean by that? Why does he keep repeating this lay down my life business? What's going on? And Jesus answers that question with another statement that shows that all of this is according to plan. It starts in verse 17. He says, the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord or voluntarily. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Now, verse 17 is a tough one to understand, because in English, it sounds like he's saying, if I don't lay down my life, God won't love me. You see that? The reason he loves me is because I lay down. It's an awkward translation, and it really is the sentence is a lot more understandable in the original language, but it's tough to translate in English. So let me paraphrase it, this whole section, taking great liberties with the translation to try to get at the meaning clearly. Jesus is saying, I know my Father knows me. We have this intimate relationship of love and oneness. And if you want to see that visibly, there's no better place to look than this. I lay down my life. I die for the express purpose of receiving my life back again. I have the authority to do that voluntarily. Nobody's going to take my life away from me. I'm going to give it so that I can take it back again. And the reason I have the authority to do that is because God told me to do it. Is that clearer? What he's saying? And you can see this love that we have for one another in the fact that I lay it down and pick it up. Well, is that according to plan? Absolutely. Why did God send a shepherd? Because we're like sheep. Why are we like sheep? Why are we so boneheaded and clueless? Why is it that the religious leaders who knew the most became corrupt and let the people wander off and get in trouble? Why is it that this special group of people who had all the advantages of a close relationship with God, written instructions on what to do, and a perfect environment, a little promised land flowing with milk and honey, why is it that that went south? Because we're separated from an essential part of what we're designed to have, and that is the Spirit of God living in us, guiding us, instructing us, empowering us, so that we don't need to follow by a list of laws, but rather we follow by a dance with God, a harmonious relationship. We don't have that because of sin. And God would love to restore that, but he cannot do that except through justice. And that requires that the penalty for sin is paid. And what's the penalty for sin? Death. Exactly. So that means God would be glad to forgive me and give me eternal life if first he kills me eternally. Now, that's not going to work. Well, maybe forgive Chris and give her eternal life if Russ dies in her place. Then the penalty is paid and she can live eternally. Wrong. Because Russ is a sinner. So are you. So am I. And he can't pay with his life for her, even though he loves her desperately, because he owes his life for his own sin. There is nobody that can pay so that we can live eternally except somebody with no sin. And God said, I'm going to send a shepherd. And he's going to live among you as a descendant of David in human skin. He's going to have no sin, and then he'll die. And because he's God, he can pay for all of you if you'll take it, according to plan. Here it is, straight out of Isaiah. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Amazing love. We like sheep, we've all gone astray. Each of us turned his own way. But the Lord has laid on him the penalty for our sin. He's cut off from the land of the living. It's a Hebrew way of saying he's going to absolutely die, totally. Why? For the transgression of my people, he's stricken. He's assigned a grave with the wicked. A rich man's going to give him a grave. Joseph of Arimathea fulfilled that. And though he had done no violence, no sin, there wasn't even any deceit in his mouth, yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life a guilt offering, he will see his offspring. That's a Hebrew way of saying he's going to live. He's going to prolong his days. And the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. All of this is Hebrew idiom for he was going to have eternal life. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life. The resurrection forecast right there. And he's going to be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. It's according to plan. And who's going to get rescued? Who's going to get justified? Those who know him. Those that he knows. It's all according to plan. And every time I stop to think that that was written down, all of those things we looked at were written down hundreds of years before Jesus came. And before he laid down his life, he said, I'm the good shepherd. I lay down my life because God commanded me to do that so I could take it up again and give it to you according to plan. So if your life feels like it's off track, if you find yourself sitting in a rickshaw barreling through some unknown territory and not knowing how to speak to the driver, so to speak, remember this. No matter what happens today or tomorrow in your life, big picture is there is a plan. Big picture is if you hear the voice of Jesus and respond to it, the plan has been accomplished and will be accomplished for eternity in your life.